Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, this is Tom Cruise, and your mission, if you choose to accept it, is to listen to this really, really great Sanspants radio podcast. Wow.
Ni hao, this is Boston actor Marky Mark Wahlberg, and there's three things I like to hit every day. Number one, the gym. Number two, Vietnamese people. And number three, the gritty. Stay prayed up and God bless. I'll catch you on the Halo app.
Actually, there is Tom Cruise news.
Baby, let's cruise. I know that when we're cruising together.
Welcome to the cruise news.
Welcome to the Drive podcast. Remember, but no, what was the movie called? Duets.
Yeah.
Now,
oh,
I.
Okay.
I,
yeah, okay.
That movie is Duets.
Who else is in that?
I haven't.
I know Gwyneth Paltrow, and then she sings it with. Is it fucking Tony? Like,
are you thinking Tony Danza?
No, not Tony Danza. Tony
Stark. Like,
no, the Frank Sinatra equivalent. Tony.
Oh, Tony Bennett.
Yeah, it's Tony Bennett and Gwyneth Paltrow.
So I don't know that anything about
went
that
number
film.
One in Australia and no one else. I think.
Yeah. So I don't know anything about that film except the video store I worked at when it came out on VHS/DVD.
Yep.
It was like 2000, 2001, and I would hear that song probably every 40 minutes. Maybe every 30 minutes over like a 5-hour shift. So it was.
And then she also did a cover of Betty Davis.
I think it's
Eyes.
Huey Lewis.
Is it really?
I have a feeling. Soundtrack, duets. Betty Davis Eyes is just yeah, Gwyneth? It's Huey Lewis. Huey and Cruisin' is Huey Lewis and Gwyneth Paltrow. That's crazy. Fucking sick.
Huey Lewis.
I don't know. Babyface is on there? Maybe Paul Giamatti's on it. He sings on the soundtrack.
We got to do a duet.
Oh, he's on quite a few tracks. Yeah, this is crazy. Okay, the only places it made money, the soundtrack did. It went gold in United States and Australia. It is on no other charts.
That's so funny.
What happened there? That feels like a psyop. That feels like one of the.
No, I just think that like Australia fucking loves lame shit sometimes.
Sometimes. We're yeah. Fucking masters of it.
You're right.
Have you seen the last like three weeks of the internet? They've like. Millennials downwards of people at Taylor Swift shows?
Dude, our country like. Went full Taylor.
Yeah.
It sucked. They changed like street signs.
They changed my train. Have you seen the train line? Because mine goes out to Olympic Park.
Right, which is where all of her shows were.
And it's one of the main ones that you have to just, I think it's one transfer. So we have like, for those who don't know Sydney trains, congratulations. They're the worst.
No, they're fine.
In the country, yeah, they're great. But in the world, it's a stinker.
Sure.
Like dog shit. Like very old tracks that like, they built basically like a loop that is, they can't change. You know what I mean? And the population has grown so much. It's a pretty dog shit design. Anyway, the LED signs that tell you the next stops, they're just names of Taylor Swift songs and the songs played over the PA.
But what if you want to get somewhere?
I know. I was like, fuck. What about tourists who are like, where am I? What is
We are
bad
never
blood?
Ever getting back together. Yeah.
Sorry. Is Bad Blood Redfern? Oh man, it was crazy. It was insane. And I mean, yeah, we're two like white guys in their 30s being like, Taylor Swift, I don't get it.
But well, like, I've always been like pretty indifferent. Like there's a few songs of hers that I do play out at weddings or when I'm doing like a big pop set
there's
or whatever.
Bangers.
For sure.
Yeah.
But this last week of, like, I worked on the same night as two of the Taylor Swift shows. Mm. And then on the other
only,
two nights.
Only four people in the country can say that. Three of them are in Blink-182 and one of them's here.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So I was DJing at the Blink shows. I managed to get one of the plush
bunnies?
Rabbit bunnies for you.
The Blink. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't want it. You know
oh,
it.
Wow. That's so
the Blink,
sick.
The Blink bunny.
Yeah, that's
well, actually,
sick.
I got two and I go, Tilly, do you want one? She looked at it. She's like, no. It's like, cool, I'll give it to Angus and Noon, I guess.
Noon will be so excited.
So I finished DJing at the Blink shows at like 11:15, right? And then I would normally just get in my car and be home by 11:30. Getting out of Olympic Park the same night as the Taylor shows was fucked up.
And you gotta put it into perspective. You're probably like 15 minutes max from there. 10 minutes.
That's exactly. Like with no traffic, I'm 10 minutes.
I'm like 12 minutes. Like, like we said, it's like smack bang in the middle of ours.
And people just, like, I was trying to go straight on a road as one does. And there are cars just driving like across the street.
We're about to Olympic Park.
Just like trying to get through Olympic Park. It was badly managed and there were so many people.
It's a terrible venue.
82,000 people at Sydney Olympic Park for her. And then 23, I think it is, for Blink.
So it was like 100,
and then there was another show on as well and some sport or whatever.
And plus people working, like hundreds of people working.
Yeah, like, yeah. It was a lot of people in there and it was just like, yeah, getting out. And then I had somewhere else to be on. I had a wedding on Sunday. And I was like, yep, I'll just drive into the city. And then I looked at the traffic and it was boned.
Wait,
and
after the show?
This is like on the Sunday. She did four shows in a row, right? So on the Sunday, I'm driving. I'm like, thank God I'm nowhere near Taylor Swift tonight.
Not all the traffic.
Dude. And again, it was just people that like just forgot how to drive.
I did something on the weekend. I can't remember what I was doing. When I went to go see Tenet in the IMAX, I was wondering why I took a train. And I was like, what's going on? And there was just all these like... It looked like bachelorette parties. It was just like women with like cheap sparkly stuff on and cowboy hats. And they were all over the city. This is like 4 p.m. And I'm like, what the fuck's going on? Is that like a racist convention at the ICC?
Yeah, there's something fucked about it, right? Like I know it's just them like celebrating their favorite artist, but I don't know. Yeah,
I'm all for fandom. I mean, this whole podcast is based about upon fandom. And we love
plenty of weird, Swift, that's cringy awesome. Shit, for
I'm,
sure.
I'm always very curious about when people... I mean, look, I can't knock Taylor Swift. I like Star Wars and the Beatles. You know what I mean?
Sure,
like,
yeah.
I'm very fascinated by people who encompass and captivate, you know, the majority of culture. I think it's a really interesting thing. Probably never going to get into Taylor Swift. That's fine. I don't mind some songs. But what the fuck does she know about Polaroid? No, that's a Kanye joke. You know, the Lady Gaga.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll save some of his other jokes about Taylor Swift for later. But
remember when he made an animatronic of her naked?
No, it was a wax model. Donald Trump, Rihanna. Oh my
God. And they all, and just had them sleeping in a big bed together naked. Yeah. Kim was in it.
Kim. They were all like in what he said, but like the most
powerful important
pop cultural figures at that moment. And you know what? He wasn't wrong. God, that was like 8 years ago. But there's something interesting about this fandom. We talk about that TikTok video that went viral this week because there was this thing that was going on, and this wasn't unique to Australia. People all over the world would like go to the stadium to listen if they missed out.
And I popped out while Blink. I saw Blink play four shows in a week. I didn't need to watch
literally
them every night.
Who are you, me in 2004 when I did the five shows?
They played. They added one new song to the set list.
Oh, what was it?
It's like a brand new song that they haven't released yet. And they played that at the final two shows.
Really?
But besides that, it was an identical set list for all the shows. But I popped out and I was like, oh, how clearly can you hear Taylor? It was sounded great. Like if I was a fan, I reckon that'd be a great time. You hang out with some friends, you get a few cold ones,
phone, or like FaceTiming from their like strapping a phone to their chest, FaceTiming. You're kind of watching it at least. You know what I mean?
And yeah. Okay. I got you, man. Yeah. No, but I just mean like just hearing it and just like, oh yeah. But instead there's a video of this girl, she's hanging out with her friends, but she's filming her reaction to all the songs as Taylor plays them.
Yeah. And kind of like, taking ownership of like, mega popular songs that she should, you know, millions of trillions of people.
Well, it was like, I mean, like, you know, and I think this is like totally encouraged when you are a live artist. Like Taylor changes her setup every night. I think she has like an acoustic part of her set.
I think there's where she like songs cycles she substitutes through every night and you don't know what songs you're going to get.
Okay,
like,
right.
I think there's a space for two songs and you don't
know. And there was
a
storm at the first show, so Sabrina Carpenter, the support act, couldn't play, so Taylor brought her out and they did a duet on a piano together.
Yeah, that's right.
Like fun surprise like that's cool. But this chick filmed her reaction of Taylor playing like some song that was important to her, and she just like lets out this like blood curdling scream. No,
she's like, no one knows like this song saved my life.
Like she's just seen someone like kill her mother in front of her point blank. You know what I mean?
It's insane.
And like, and she's like crying into her friends who are like trying not to laugh at her, and the fact that like she had that reaction. I mean,
that's fine.
You know, like people have art passionate.
Resonates with people, but also like she might have had a really rough time in her life, and maybe that song got her out of the darkness. I get it, but then it's
but
like
she recorded setting that up, reaction, and then posting it without the shame of like,
yeah,
maybe this is ridiculous.
Well, this is
like,
an interesting thing in the dark side of fandom that is definitely not unique to Taylor Swift and is very unique to Star Wars as well. I mean, very obvious in Star Wars as well. There's this ownership where you're kind of like, that's mine. Like, you know what I mean? There's like with Star Wars fans, there's people that are like, I'm the Clone War. Like, you can't talk about the Clone War. It's like, dude, it's a fucking cartoon
series. Yeah,
when
Boar Gullet died in Rogue One, you, I was like, no!
I feel myself, but it's kind
crying.
Of... crying. Fandom's great, but it's also, when you gatekeep it, it's really insane. Interesting article this week, too.
Is that gatekeeping? I feel like that's sharing every... That's like
no,
the opposite.
You're like, this is my song,
okay.
And I'm showing you... That
how
I'll cry
it is
in
to
front
me,
of her
because I miss
to prove
it.
That it's mine. And if you're not filming yourself crying, how you know what I mean? It's
like this
weird hysteria ownership. Very interesting piece.
For me, it's just lack of shame.
The failing ABC published this week, which was the average age of a Taylor Swift fan is millennial, 45 onwards. Wait, yeah, millennials.
So older millennials.
No, the average age is like 45.
Yeah, right.
And I found that. Very fascinating.
That's like Gen Y though, isn't it?
Gen X. Yeah. Gen Y is millennial. They renamed a millennial. Don't worry. I was reading the wiki last night when I was in a spiral.
Comparing it.
Yeah.
I just know that I'm a millennial, which seems
we're millennials.
Like,
if you're
cheating.
Born between 1981 and 1996, you're a millennial.
So Taylor Swift is a millennial.
Yeah, she's probably the queen of millennials.
1989, because she made an album called 1989.
That's right.
I assume that's her birth year.
You'd think so.
Well, she's not just a fan of like, oh yeah, that year that was 3 years before I was born.
Back to the Future,
great year. Yeah.
Roger Rabbit getting a home release.
Super Mario 3.
Yeah, the Wizard.
Yep.
Yeah.
Big Wizard.
Big Wizard over here. Yeah, it's interesting that the average age is 45.
I mean, that checks because, like, you know, I feel like it's people who still use Facebook, Taylor Swift fans.
Perfect
yeah.
analogy. It's, yeah, and again, this isn't a I hate Taylor Swift at all.
I mean, she did make me late 4 times in 1 week.
She made me
I'm
feel,
allowed to hate someone that does
she
that.
She made me feel strange before I saw Tenet and felt a different type of strange, like a good strange. But also, like, it's been insane watching.
But what if?
I've seen people that I know and people who, like, they're competing to be like, I'm the biggest Taylor Swift fan, but just by like essays they're writing on Instagram. And like someone spoke about the struggles of buying tickets and they're like, this isn't just this concert, it's the hours I spend on multiple laptops. And I'm like,
I mean,
what are you
dude,
talking about?
So Matt B and Tilly like a few of her songs and I was like, you know, I mean, that would be a fun thing to tick off. Like,
for
take
sure.
the kids to a Taylor Swift song. I got in the queue for like 10 minutes.
Oh, you know.
And then I was like, no, I'm not spending any more of my day doing this.
Yeah.
I'll only spend that long trying to get tickets to a Kirby cafe.
Now
thank you
I
very
talking.
Much.
Well,
yeah.
Me buying our Ghibli Park tickets.
Bro.
I had iPad, iPhone, and MacBook opened, and double Safari browsers on each. And so I had 6 windows altogether because it was like, I was reading on the Reddit about like how to do it. Anyway, whatever. That's another story.
No, I love it. No, the coolest thing is that like, so Ghibli Park is like the second Studio Ghibli kind of like land you can go to. The first one is a straight up museum. This is like a utilizing
like an outdoor park.
National park that also that like, they've built these monuments to all, so many different movies. Mm. When I was there with my family last year, I considered it. It's in Nagoya, which is like pretty far from, you know, everywhere else we were going would have been a full out of the way trip to go there. But at that point, they'd only opened like two sections of it. Whereas now there are like 6 and each of the sections has all these different
and I think they were made,
attractions in it. Like,
I think they were forced to kind of open early because that whole park was essentially open to fund The Boy and the Heron.
Yeah, totally.
As was
the
Netflix
deal. Yeah.
And I have a feeling because it was supposed to open when the Olympics were opening.
Mm-hmm.
Think and everything obviously like fell apart And I think they had to essentially open it unfinished, which right. I'm sure Miyazaki was...
So they could pay for the park itself.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Miyazaki was pissed about that. But it seems and sounds like it's kind of where it's supposed to be at the moment.
So yeah, you were very much leading the charge, like, oh, we should go. I'll get us tickets. And I was like, yeah, cool. That'll be great. And then on
but
Saturday...
But you didn't realize the amount of...
On Saturday night, I like went on the website and went through it all.
Dude, it's incredible. We're going to freak it there.
The food options, like, you know, if you listen to HeyFam, you know we love a PDF menu.
I mean, if we had a different... If we have had to rename our podcast, it could be The Food Fellas. But we'd probably have to go to court.
Worth it.
Yeah.
What about the PDF menu fellas?
Yeah, PDF fellas. Yeah.
But the food options at Jidly Park in Nagoya...
Mm. Nagoya.
No.
It's Nagoya.
I mean, that's like the... Nagoya.
Yeah. Nagoya. Nagoya. You were saying like Nagoya.
What's that?
Like, I don't know. You say,
yeah, I know. It's been whatever. People call me... Whenever I say anything on my TikTok, people call me out that I'm saying it wrong.
Keep it makes you stronger. Nagoya.
But the options there are wild. Like there is a milk stand, mm-hmm. which is based off of... The Wind Rises,
yeah.
which is, you know, set during World War II, where you can buy bottled local milk with a foil cap and it's like got special, like, you know, Ghibli branded.
We have to do that.
Oh, man, you better believe first thing we're getting in there is
fasting until we milk. Get there.
Yeah, and then also like a very specific, you know, that era, like Showa era of Japan, like a milk cake? Milk cake.
Yeah,
that
you, cake. Yeah, that yeah, you haven't seen it, have you?
I'm going to watch it. So I've made a list. So my homework before we go to Japan is fill a few gaps in my Ghibli resume. Yeah. I only need to watch one Miyazaki movie, which is Wind Rises. Cool. I've seen every other Miyazaki movie.
So I'm doing all the
movie.
Other ones as well.
I've never seen Whisper of the Heart and The Cat Returns, and I know they've got a big presence at the park.
Because they're massive in Japan.
Yeah.
Because Whisper in the Heart is based off a manga, like a popular manga. Maybe had a different name. And it's kind of a bit like Madame Web. There's a dream sequence in it where the lead like hangs out with cats.
Yes.
And then that was so popular that they made a sequel called The Cat Returns, which is all about that. Just
an
expanded version with like different characters. But I think the same cat, and I don't know, but it's basically Madame Web, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So the original Madame Web.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. It's a Ghibli Madame Web. I'm going to watch like Only Yesterday as well.
Yes, I've got that too. Cause that's, he did Only Yesterday, My Neighbors, the Yamadas and Pompoko. I watch all
Grave of the Fireflies.
Okay. I've seen that.
I can't watch that again.
Yeah. It's a bummer.
Yeah. Like I love it. I think it's a masterpiece, but I'm watching all of the Ghiblis before we go and
that's
I'm
great.
Up to Only Yesterday and I'm just like, I'm just going to skip Grave of the Fireflies. That's kind of fucking, kids in war at the moment.
It's
brutal stuff to look at regardless of medium. Tale of Princess Kaguya, he also did as his last
man
film.
What a wild
yeah, really interesting
filmography.
Really, you know, I you know, Miyazaki's always the one who's
see how you said Kaguya.
Yeah,
so it's Nagoya.
Yeah, well, it's not because Kaguya has a U in it and Nagoya has an O in it.
Yeah, but so you, there's no... When you have O and Y next to each other in Hiragana, you don't put them together like boy. It's O and then the next syllable.
Yeah, Nagoya.
Nagoya.
Yeah, Nagoya. Nagoya.
Nagoya.
What the... Now I... Nagoya. Nagoya. Fuck, man. I now I'm confused.
You've got 2 months to work it out.
Yeah, well, let's not ever
ask
it
every
out.
Local.
Yeah, interesting because obviously
I've had Miyazaki every cunt on fucking TikTok and Instagram telling me I've been saying Ghibli wrong.
It's Ghibli.
Well, but Europeans, because it's named after an aeroplane, which is actually pronounced in Italy Ghibli.
Well, it's the Arabic word for wind.
Yeah. And so a lot of people from Europe are like, no, it's Ghibli. It's Ghibli. I'm like, yeah, but look,
Japanese.
The fucking symbol is J.
It means nothing as well.
And then they could come at me and be like, well, you don't say Jibori, which is how
Jibori
Miyazaki's.
But it's like,
dude, I've had a lot of like booking things in Japan this week and having to put my name in Furigana.
Fuck, that's so.
So looking up how each of the symbols and then typing that in so you can, you know, print your name onto a ticket. And it's so funny. My name is like, it just sounds so fucking racist when it's spelled. It's Andoru Ribinzu.
Yeah, mine's like Angasu Turasketo or something like that. But Miyazaki always like the guy you think of Ghibli, but like Takahata is someone that, like, I admittedly don't know any his film. I mean, obviously his films haven't translated as much outside of Japan to the West.
Mm.
But, like, really interesting that he's, like, constantly playing with, like, you know, My Neighbors the Yamadas was the first Ghibli film to be digitally animated and stuff like that. Like, he was really kind of... And obviously, Tale of the Bamboo Cutter, beautifully, like, water paint style. You know, really interesting that he's, like, up for changing the look of stuff where Miyazaki, you have a look at a frame and it's a Miyazaki film.
Exactly. Like, he's constantly just, like, slightly improving his style. I mean, and that's what made Boy and the Heron so different, is because he got new animators
to different sequences
and didn't give them notes. He was like, he like took a little less control,
which is so awesome.
The film.
And that's how you get that opening scene,
that incredible opening scene,
the fire,
which looks unlike anything you've seen in one of his movies before. Because literally someone completely new did it, and they were allowed to cook, as opposed to him like going, no, do it my way.
And then that's so crazy that he did that.
One thing that was very surprising with the park is that there is an attraction at Ghibli Park which is based on the Studio Ghibli movie that everyone but me fucking hates, that Hedwig, his son made.
The witch area, right?
Yeah, there's like, you can go in the house from Hedwig and the witch.
I love that.
Which is sick.
That's so
and
fucking
it makes me think that like maybe he doesn't hate Goro too much.
I don't think he does at all.
Yeah.
I think he's just Japanese. what do you think Miyazaki thinks of Taylor Swift?
I don't think he knows who she is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think so. But I tell you what, Taylor Swift's gone. Fred Again's coming to the country. The country has fever with people coming to play shows.
At least I understand why Taylor Swift is popular.
Yeah.
Fred Again, it's like, why anyone would... He's going to sell out 5 arena shows where you have to buy a ticket and sit down to watch a DJ.
I don't know what it is with Taylor Swift. I've tried listening to the songs. And I just find there's no like X factor to them. It's like very clean...
Well, I think that's the mass appeal. It's not just mass appeal. It also, like, her voice is like average to good.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, she hasn't
anyone you could
and you see her dance and she dances.
She can't dance
exactly, but I think like that's shit. Part of the appeal.
Yeah, it's just a Facebook.
It's like
mom,
they're like,
isn't
good
it?
For her.
It's like full
Taylor.
Facebook mom. You're
yeah,
so
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like very big.
It's, yeah, like Facebook moms love it because they imagine Taylor as their daughter who sucks at dancing.
Yeah,
and you're still going to every single concert.
Yeah,
I should get it.
I feel
more
like
as
we're
a,
on the cusp
of it.
Of
a
you
dancer.
Know how there was like famously, there's been some Taylor backlash. I mean, it always happens when you're famous, but there's been errors.
The best Taylor backlash ever is people making fun of her for taking private jets places.
It's the best.
It's the greatest.
Picture of like, you know, like a jet plane in the middle of the like airfield. It's like when Taylor forgets to charge her phone.
No, what one was like, there's like was the interior of a plane and then someone put another plane in the plane and it was like when Taylor wants to go from one aisle, one side of the seat to the other.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
But it feels like since the Grammys, there's been another like bubbling backlash, and this
because she's a total tool at the Grammys. Every like every
this
video you
thing.
See of her like yucking it up with like Boy Genius and
not
stuff.
Just that
they just look so uncomfortable.
I know
around
nothing
her.
About her. She has the world's
the Celine Dion snub.
Like I know nothing about her.
Yeah,
she has the world's largest platform. All I have ever heard or see her do on these platforms is announce the next album.
Yeah.
And she did that at the Grammy. Like, that's such a no-no.
I know, like...
But, like, all I've seen her, I reckon, in, like, 4 to 5 years, whenever she's on a stage, even at one of the shows in Sydney...
I wish Kanye was at that Grammy.
...announced a deluxe
just
version
just to see his reaction
of,
to her announcing it.
Her upcoming album. She announced a deluxe version of her upcoming album, which has one extra track. And she's announced 3 different versions on this, like, Australian...
Well,
of the same
that
album.
She's, like, monetized the term Taylor's version to be this empowering thing. But now she's
selling 9 versions of the vinyl.
Yeah. And like, yeah, it's like, and it's not her reclaiming her masters back anymore. It's just like, it's just branding.
But every time I've seen her take to a platform where she could be like, you know, don't vote for Donald Trump. And I don't know, like, you know what I mean? Like use her platform and do some radical stuff. She's like, I'm announcing my new album.
But she's so safe. She would never ever
that's
do anything.
That's what I mean. She's like, there's zero edge.
Like maybe if she was like, you know, in the running
about, like,
again,
she'd
support Hillary. Supporting Hillary is like the closest thing to political Taylor would ever get.
What's that song she sings about being on the bleachers?
I don't know, man.
It's really funny because now she's kind of in my, like I, as an outsider who doesn't like listen to her or like know, like and all I know is like, she's been chastised for 20 years for like dating every white guy in America, essentially, who's famous. But her latest boyfriend's that like, you know, football player. And it's funny because I swear she has a song where she's like, I'm on the bleachers crying. Like, I'm not the pretty girl. The homecoming king's with someone else. I'm like, oh, she's become the person that she's like sad about in a song.
The bulk of my Taylor songs in my music library come from when I like I saw an opportunity and grabbed it and did a Kanye versus Taylor party at a two room nightclub in like whenever that, you know, whenever the... Was that 2014, 2015?
I mean, the original was 2009 with the I'm Gonna Let You Finish.
Whenever Famous was out.
The big one, Famous was 2016.
Okay, so I did it then and sold like 950 tickets or something insane like that. But all my Taylor songs are from that era and I'm not going to rebuy the Taylor's versions of them. So people will often be like, why aren't you playing the Taylor's version of Love Story? I'm like, because I have a perfectly fine version already. Yeah. Like,
it's crazy. I mean, very fascinating figure, I think. But also, like, doesn't say anything, for better or for worse. I mean, look, you know, the other guy you mentioned, Kanye, who is obviously cosmically interlinked with this person, he says everything. It's not always good.
No,
so it's like,
no,
but you're
somewhere in between.
I'd rather someone who says everything. I want
you don't want someone feeling super, super safe.
Yeah, I want someone who says shit that even I don't agree with.
Yeah.
Because, like, you shouldn't worship these people, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But she's kind of this like really interesting blank thing. It's so I was fascinated this week just
she even has a song called Blank Space.
Oh wow. I'm so interested just this week seeing people like come out of the woodwork and it's been really interesting. I mean, you know, if it makes you feel good, nice.
Yeah,
you know,
I went and saw Driveaway Dolls today, the new one
by its dead name. No, you don't
Ethan
have to.
Ethan Cohen that he wrote with his gay wife.
Yeah,
like they have like an arrangement.
Oh,
like,
hey,
they have to,
don't use that slur, man. Maybe
they have
I'm
kids.
I'm joking.
They have kids, and she has a female partner, and he has also a female partner, I think. But they have kids together, and they also made a movie together.
Crazy.
And the original title was Driveaway Dykes.
Yeah.
It's about two lesbians played by Margaret Qualley and...
Go on, try to say it.
Geraldine, the Australian actor who was in that weird show with Harry Potter and Steve Buscemi, and many other things, but she's great in this.
Yeah.
Last name starts with a V.
It's V, yeah. Let's have a look.
She's fucking great. They're both fucking great. Margaret Qualley, I thought I wouldn't like because of her delivery...
Viswanathan.
Good job. Her...
Or Viswanathan. I mean, I don't know.
Her... Margaret Qualley's southern accented lines in the trailer I thought were like going to really hurt my ears, but she, like, you just love her straight away. It's like shades of Cage in Raising Arizona vibes.
Qualley?
Yeah.
Sick. Yeah, she gets bonkers sometimes.
This is like a off the wall, silly Coen movie in the same vein as like
Raising Arizona,
Burn After Reading.
Sick.
So Ethan Coen is the writer of the two brothers.
Yeah.
And this could not be more tonally different to the beautiful looking but aggressively dry Shakespeare adaptation, Macbeth with Denzel, that his brother Joel did a couple years ago, which I loved the experience of watching, but like... You know, if I was to put them, like, rank them all, I don't know where the fuck it would go because it feels like such an outlier.
How do you feel now that they're not making movies together?
I reckon they will again. But, I'm seeing this, you go, oh, cool. This has all the goofy, fun Coen shit that I love, but it's just not shot as well.
Yeah. And I've heard it's kind of cheap looking it's not great looking.
The worst thing about this movie is that the scene transitions are fucking wild. They're like the scene will suddenly freeze and then the frame will go and like suddenly the next stuff, it's fucked.
That's crazy.
Like the image will go like and like,
what?
Like drive off the screen and then wipe into the next scene.
Like Dad with iMovie going crazy.
And then they just kind of give up on that for a while.
Oh.
And then there's like these weird trippy visuals.
Weird.
That they make sense by the end of the movie.
Do you think Joel would have reined that one in?
Yeah, but like there's a kind of silliness to them that like adds to it.
Yeah,
I think I would love this movie on second watch. The first, it's nowhere near as fucking strange and certainly nowhere near as bad as Lady Killers.
Yeah,
Tom
Hanks.
I'm a total Coen completionist. That's my first like proper movie obsession.
Yeah, the Coes.
Like I guess around the time of Big Lebowski, I was like, who are these guys? I fucking love them, and just watched everything. You know, got my dad to rent me Blood Simple, which was rated R.
That's right.
From the video store at like age 14. I love their entire catalog. Like, totally, there's movies that I like more than others, but like my absolute favorite ones are the goofy comedies or the goofy comedic moments in an otherwise very serious movie. Like, I love Miller's Crossing for that reason, but then I also love like the pure goofiness of like Hudsucker Proxy, and I even loved what's one with like fucking Channing Tatum about like old school Hollywood, George Clooney.
No, Hail Caesar's incredible.
Fucking amazing. Yeah, movie. I love Hail Caesar. So good, like super underrated. And I think with time, this is going to be like cult classic. Cast is wild.
Oh, really?
It's like Pedro Pascal.
That's right.
Beanie Felds. Yeah. The Beanie, what's her name? Beanie Man. Beanie Woman.
Yeah. Beanie Hill.
There is a big cameo that they've spoiled in trailers. But one of our favorites plays a senator in this, and
wow,
his connection to this movie is
Shea Whigham?
Is so is funny. Whigham? No, it's like a classic favorite. Okay. He's in your favorite movie of last year, but he's in almost everything. Whenever a movie has a big Hollywood cameo in it, it's generally this guy.
I'm trying to think who it is.
I reckon you can get it.
Tony Stark?
No, it's Matt Damon.
Oh, Matt Damon.
You know what I mean? Yeah. He's in trailers. It's not really a spoiler. But,
no, I didn't know he was in it.
And like the reason why he has a connection, his Matt character Darren has a connection to this story is so fucking funny. And you're like, oh, Ethan is the horny one of the Coens that puts all the sex jokes in their movies.
I'm the incel No Country for Old Men lover.
Yeah, so that one I think is a wonderful movie, but it is like one of the least Coen-y movies.
Oh, it doesn't feel like a Coen Brothers film.
Yeah.
Closest one it feels like is Man Who
Wasn't
There.
No, even that's like that's like such so oddball. It's yeah, closer, I'd say like it's to closer movie. To Fargo than that.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's like an a unfunny pure Fargo
crime movie. Yeah,
it's like a very unfunny Fargo. Do you think we'll see like a similar thing with like these two, you know, brothers that were established as creatives, going kind of, I guess, their separate ways to make stuff that have the quality they brought to the pair with like the Russos? No. Do you think one?
Yeah, they're going to make the Quiet Man.
One will
too.
Be gay.
Oh, sure.
One will cast himself as a gay guy and everything, and the other one will like just be the other Russo.
I mean, I love that. Like, not only were they able to get so many movies made, the two of them, but now like they're able to get these like super weird high concept movies made, the one of them.
What's Joel doing at the moment?
I'm not sure. I mean, there are rumors that they're going to work on another like a horror movie. Next.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, I get it. They've been working together for like 40 years, essentially.
So many movies. And like,
I never get, I mean, I get, I know with the Coen brothers, it was more of a technicality when, yes, one was the writer, one was the director.
No, but I think I've heard a lot of people discuss like this movie and like watching it, it's clear that Joel is the director.
But I know like
and Ethan is the writer.
Billed as both, but yep. They weren't really like
one. And but, even when I was in high school, I used to buy Ethan's books. Ethan has some short story collections that I love.
I find it so strange when there's like co-directors who are actually like co-directors. And I'm like, does that make them like double as good as a director or as a regular one, or are they half as bad because they need two of the, you know what I mean? It always like kind of plagued me.
But so this ties into what we were talking about earlier. I went to a 12:30 screening of this at Castle Hill Cinemas in Sydney today.
Oh, that's what I've got to get a thing.
He's got to get a thing. While I was there, I'm walking into the cinema. I used to normally like, you know, watching these movies with geriatric people, but the only five other people, it was just a group of five girls, and they were all wearing Taylor Swift merchandise.
Really?
Yeah.
So
oh shit, man.
No, it's not you. It's perspiration.
Yeah, we don't want my water was dripping all over Angus's important movie books.
Yeah, I've got to move my
mic. I was gonna put that shit on coaster. I always forget. Sorry.
That's all right.
Here we are. But
Taylor Swift, how old were they?
Maybe like 10 years younger than me.
Yeah.
Like late 20s. Oh, wow. But they were laughing awkwardly at this entire movie. Like, it's very bawdy.
Yeah.
Like,
they probably didn't think it was going to be.
And I think they may have only been in there because another cameo in the movie is Miley Cyrus.
Oh, wow.
But I'm not sure. I wanted to be like, what did you guys think? But like, I also was like, I don't want to be that weird guy. So I just kind of like smiled as I saw them.
You don't
want to
like
mansplain.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah. Well, actually, you know, if you start
things with Miller's Crossing, you'd actually work upwards. You'll find that there's a...
Miller's Crossing, probably my favorite Coen movie. That's what I would have said.
Is that what you would have said?
Yeah, I would have said.
Of course like, you would have. Yeah. I guess that.
I reckon like gun to my head, pick my favorite. It's either that or Oh Brother, Where Art Thou. And like, I don't think they're the best movies. They're just my favorites.
I put that in the fire.
I think Miller's Crossing is my favorite more serious crime Coen one. And then of all the goofy comedies, I think Oh Brother is the strongest.
Yeah, Oh Brother's amazing. I
fucking love A Burn After Reading too.
Oh Brother's like the execution of that film, the look, the acting,
the lines, and like there are some iconic line deliveries from Margaret and Geraldine in this too.
I think George Clooney's top two or three performances, Oh Brother.
Absolutely. I don't want FUP. I'm a Dapper Dan man.
Dapper Dan. Yeah, Dapper Dan. He's amazing.
Holly Hunter, incredible in that movie.
John Goodman, incredible.
Said my word. What's that? Oh yeah, incredible. It's the Cyclops.
Fuck, it's such
he squishes
film.
The frog.
It's such
incredible
a film.
Sound.
Yeah.
Fucking John Turturro and Tim Blake Nelson.
Who wasn't in Dune 2 despite in the credits.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Stephen Root. You could pick almost every Coen movie. You could just list a bunch of the best actors in the universe.
I'll have to catch it.
I would definitely recommend seeing it. It's like, I think on first watch will never be more than like a 3-star movie to someone.
Sometimes we need 3-star films.
But I think with time, I'll come to love this one.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because like, after getting out, I'm like, man, that was cool. Yeah. And it's like, it's so goofy.
That's a nice feeling.
And it has all of my favorite, like, you know, sudden heightened violence and like, you know, just wildly good performances.
Yeah,
great supporting
awesome.
Cast.
Great. Yeah. That fucking rules. Shout out.
Don't
to
know
Coens.
If the Swifties liked it.
Shout out to the Swifties. Shout out to the Coens.
But we should get to the main event.
Oh yeah. Dinner is
people served. Listening right now must be like, what are they doing?
Yeah. These guys, they're doing what they always do. Yapping away. We just warming
the two
up.
Chair. We are the two chair guys.
We're just warming up.
We're both chair the chair guys of HeyFam.
HeyFam is both. Yeah, that's the beautiful thing with HeyFam. We're both chair guy.
real yappers.
Yeah.
We're
yapping.
And now a word from our really, really great sponsors. Trust me, I know a lot about good deals, folks, and this is a great deal.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I saw Dune 2 last night. Do you know every time an Australian says June on a podcast, they lose 3 American listeners?
Do they?
I don't know. I assume so. It must be so frustrating. It must be like, yeah.
Arrakis.
June. Yeah. But they finally say it in the movie and they say Dune.
Dune. An old Fremen word. Dune.
So I saw Dune 2 last night. You saw it last week.
That's right.
On the biggest screen in the
I
Southern Hemisphere.
I saw it in the IMAX, which out the gate, I'd say 80 to 83% of the film is in IMAX.
Oh, interesting. So yeah.
Definitely if you get a chance to see it on the biggest screen possible, listener and yourself,
mm-hmm.
Andrew, do it.
Thank you.
It's
So I saw it at George Street, the same premiere venue that they used for Madame Web. And you'll recall...
Was there a plaque on the wall? Home of the Madame Web screening.
Like a trophy.
Someone's like drilled it on there. It's like in memory of the Madame Web screening.
Well, I mean,
everybody laughed.
They gave us fucking hot dogs at that.
I was going to say, at June, did they give you hot dogs?
We got popcorns and waters and soft drinks, you know? Yeah. Like, there was some, I just feel like
the IMAX one was crazy.
Put some stupid effort in. Did you get any like dumb bullshit?
Well, we had great bullshit. It was, they had huge, so it was very classy. They had like massive like metal buckets that you'd put champagne in with ice in it, with every flavor Choc Tops in there. And you could just, me and my dad grabbed 2 each.
Yeah, you did.
Well, it was a 3.5 hour. Yeah, yeah. Because you had to sit down.
You've got to eat a melted hot Choc Top.
No, I had 2 at the start. That's and then amazing. Popcorns.
Double Choc Top.
Yeah. Because we're like, should we get dinner afterwards? And we walked in, we're like, dinner's served. And we just started eating at like 5:31 PM, Choc Tops, popcorns and drinks. But yeah, it was a classy setup. Then they had like a watch on display in a glass case being like inspired by Dune 2. And it was like some like expensive brand watch.
But no, like no cool giveaways. You get a lanyard or something?
No.
Damn.
They're like, we don't need to do that shit. This movie's going to make
I wish monster. They would. Though. Okay. So, all right. Before we get into our thoughts on the movie, do you think this is going to be like, do you reckon this is going to make more than the first one?
Yes, absolutely. First one was released during COVID. I do know.
Oh, that's a really good point.
It was put on HBO Max as well.
But you know why I don't remember it?
Is because the first one also had made $30 million last week. No, in the last 2 weeks because of the re-release.
Yeah, sure.
Which is crazy.
I forgot they put it on Max. It was one of those movies.
Yep, it was part of the...
What a fucking crime.
It was part of Chris Nolan being like, I'm out. Yeah, we're never ever getting back together. It was a callback to the start.
Yeah, fuck. Imagine if Warner Brothers got Barbie and Oppenheimer last year.
Just clown shit.
Clown shit.
Yeah, this one's going to make way more than the first one. It's one of the movies.
I remember around the world. The first one came out during that weird period of time where everywhere in the world had COVID except Sydney.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I saw it in a really weird circumstance where Sydney Film Festival got it halfway through the festival and put it on at a midnight screening at a Hoyts at George Street in like a weird...
That's fucking weird.
Yeah. And I got 2 tickets and saw it at like midnight till 3 a.m. It was fucked.
The other day I was thinking like, God, I am so glad that we as a culture grew out of midnight screenings.
Yeah, they just do the night before now.
It was like, so dumb.
Yeah. Yeah.
I saw so many Star Wars movies at midnight. And
yeah,
like,
you did.
And like just like trying to stay awake.
Yeah. I mean... I'd go to one in a heartbeat.
Yeah, sure.
Obviously. But the freaking Dune midnight screening is the only time they could have it because I think the whole festival's booked out.
Right, of course.
And it was insane. It was so strange. It was in a weird, like, off-the-side theater.
How long before the actual release did you see it?
It was like a month or...
Crazy.
Yeah, it was like a month or so because that's what was weird. We were just like, these big movies were coming out, like Tenet, like Dune, and like we just didn't know how to see them. Or sometimes you couldn't see them, and then
you saw Tenet again finally on the and the IMAX screen.
That's right. I saw it the way it was meant to be seen.
Loved it.
Fucking.
Now you said 82% of Dune was IMAX. 100% of Tenet is IMAX, right?
No, I'd say like 85.
Thank you for these accurate.
Most of Oppenheimer is and Dunkirk. But yeah, I'd say maybe Tenet's a little, I don't know yet. It's I'd say 80, in the 80 mark. Fantastic. Again, it felt like, fuck, COVID really fucked up some of our guys. The movie was meant to be seen on that shit.
The thing is like, yeah, I
fuck,
during a less busy time, if I didn't spend like fucking 60% of my week last week DJing,
yeah,
or stuck in traffic because of Taylor Swift, I would have done the full run, yeah, but like I just couldn't justify like not doing work or you know not helping out at home while I go see movies on a big screen. But it was partly that, but also like I had perfect film experiences when I saw Tenet for the first time with you and Noon. That was one of the best. That was probably the best night of that year.
Yeah.
That was 2020. It was COVID year. That was probably the best night of the year for me. Just such a special night, having some beers like at the pub around the corner.
In the theater, maybe?
Yeah.
We had the fucking balcony to ourselves.
Yeah. And Noon being the only one who understood every second of that movie.
He's a palindrome.
And I've since watched Tenet a couple of times since. I love that movie.
I love it
too. I do wish I managed to squeeze it in. But then, yeah, Dune the First.
Dune the First.
That's what they're calling in the streets.
No. Not at all. That sounds like a date. It sounds like a Dune the First.
B had a teacher's strike. Because she's a public school teacher, and there was a teacher's strike on the day that came out.
Oh yeah!
And so I was like, "Fuck, you know what we should do on your teacher's strike? Let's go see Dune.
Let's go get
Wormy." And so we went to one of those bed cinemas.
Oh yeah!
And watched Dune in a bed.
That's
like,
insane.
When it was like, I'm like, that's a perfect experience. Yeah. So I'm like, you know, it's fine. I had the best
possible that's a great
cinema
experience. I saw it there, and then I saw it with my dad, I believe. He came up, we saw it at Broadway. I think I might have only seen it twice at theaters.
So that's like the one thing I do regret. My dad fucking loves Tenet and fucking loves Dune.
You haven't seen either with him?
I should go watch. I should. Yeah, we should do it.
Absolutely, you should. And maybe I'll see Dune 2 with him next week. Yeah, and then I did the rewatch. I saw Dune 1 2 weekends ago.
June the 1st
at IMAX. And once again, that was like, oh, this is how this was supposed to be.
Sure, seen. Yeah,
fucking
cool.
Insane. From the get-go, you're just like, holy shit.
So Dune 2, I think...
Well, I mean, let's talk about your relation with Dune 1.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sick movie. It's
You hadn't read the...
I own the book. I think I own two different prints of the book.
Really?
I've never read past the first, like, 8 pages.
Sure.
Because it's, you know, famously a very, very dense start.
It
especially,
throws
right?
you in and doesn't explain stuff. Unlike,
I should have just bought a fucking audiobook version of it. Apparently, there's some wonderful ones out there. Yeah.
I can't believe I read it.
Me too.
Yeah, and I'm halfway through Messiah at the moment.
That's so cool, man.
Yeah, I'm going to do all the... At least the Frank Herbert Dune.
But... I think the first movie stands so well on its own as a movie.
Really? Even the ending?
Yeah. I didn't like it. Ends in a, I think, a very satisfying place where a lot of things get wrapped up enough that you're like, wow, and that's the end of that chapter.
It feels very
What's the next chapter?
To me, because it ends like just before he's about to like go to the Fremen.
Yeah, but he beats the dude. He
beats Janice.
And it feels like, I remember like... The first Janice. Time I watched it, it felt like, what's the fucking Sandra Bullock's in space movie?
Gravity.
And you know how like the last half hour of that is just like bullshit happening to Sandra Bullock nonstop. Mm. Give this lady a fucking break. You know, like she finally like gets into a pod and then starts like returning to Earth, but then it breaks up on reentry, and then she finally lands and she's safe, but then everything catches on fire. Mm-hmm. And you're like, man, fuck, come on. Like, you know, like, is she going to survive? What's going down?
So you found the first one like that.
I love that energy. I love you know, he and his mum finally like, you know, escape. Yep. It's like these amazing tense scenes of them trying to get away and the fucking worms. And then they meet these guys and they get challenged straight away, and he has to, and you don't know what his combat skills are like.
Kicks the shit out of him.
And he fucking, and you go, like, holy shit.
He's
like,
crazy.
And it ends in such a like, wow. And
reminds me of the, I guess like Fellowship of the Ring, where it does end on a narrative end note for that story. But it's very much implied that there's more to be coming.
For me, it really felt like something completely on its own.
Really?
Whereas this second movie felt, to me, way more like a Lord of the Rings movie.
In
it
what
felt
sense?
In the sense that like this felt like the second movie in a trilogy.
Yeah.
And I didn't, and I'm like, I'm pretty across shit, right? Mm. I thought, I was like, this is the second part of Dune, the first Dune book.
Mm.
And there's like what I assume 15 minutes of the movie left. Like I'm looking at my watch and I'm like, how the fuck are they gonna wrap all this up?
Mm.
And they don't. That's like that. I feel like that's not a spoiler.
I mean, part of it's
I think wrapped. If I knew this, I would like. I'm definitely going to see this movie again.
Yeah,
because I was like, "What the fuck? That's it?"
See, like, I knew how it was going to end because of the book.
Yeah, totally. And I think this is like,
and it is an adaptation.
That's and I feel like having not even I've not read it, but I can tell that this is an amazing adaptation. Mm. In the same way that another fucking book I haven't read, Lord of the Rings, that those books are like first and foremost an amazing adaptation, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then
they're probably
that are also
the
great movies.
Most people know.
But as someone that just went to see them as movies.
But I mean, the movies are the version of Lord of the Rings that I'd say the general population know more than the
books. The first, I remember seeing the first movie, and that was at my like fucking drunkest, most Coen loving era of my life.
Really?
What
was it 2001? So we were 16.
And I was like, what the fuck movie is this? I really didn't like the first
really?
One. And then I got like, I started seeing a girl.
You sobered up.
When no, I was still drunk at that time, very drunk. But she was like the movie. I think the movies had all come out on DVD by then, so this would have been like 2003. And she was like, "Let's watch them all." And I like could not believe how good the second one was.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And
you know what? It's nothing. The pacing of it and the structure of it is nothing like the book.
Yeah, but then the third one I thought like had like with its 7 endings.
The first one's still my favorite.
Yeah, right.
Fellowship's my favorite. I find it's the most satisfying film. Maybe for the same reasons you felt Dune was, like, part one is like a whole thing.
For me,
because that's really interesting. Most of the complaints about Dune 1 is it ends just before something's about to happen. Like, I mean, people have told me anecdotally, and also that's like feedback in a lot of critical consensus was like, oh, it just kind of ends. Like, it ends on a cliffhanger. Even my dad watched it that day before we saw 2. He watched it that morning before coming up to Sydney, and he's like, oh, I forgot it just kind of just ends.
Yeah, but it's so, I feel like it wraps so much up. Like, you have the fall of the House of Atreides.
It doesn't wrap up anything.
But I mean, like, you know, he's...
It's like everything's on a cliffhanger.
But I mean, like, his, you know, Paul's dad fucking dies. Empire is over.
I would say that's like a wrap up.
No, but I mean, that is like, it is dealt with, I guess. You know what I mean? Like,
see, to me, that's a cliffhanger because you're like, well, how's he going to get it back? Everything's left in the...
But it felt like... It didn't feel like setup. The first movie doesn't feel like setup, whereas a lot of the second movie...
Really? Not him going to the Fremen and being like, teach me your... That to me is... That is...
For me, that was like, I'm ready for my next chapter.
Yeah, that's
like,
setup.
I know, but it was like, now that this part is over... No, I'm totally with you. It is totally a form of setup. Like,
yeah.
But I mean, like, it really felt like they were tying a bow around one thing. And if you want the next thing, there's another movie.
And I mean, that's kind of like how the book works too, you know? Like, there's a distinct middle part and then... I mean, a half... But it kind of a half and then it's... Two other bits.
This felt a little bit like Spider-Verse to me, where I was like, oh, okay, I guess they're going to make another one at some point. And then B was like, what's the plan? When's the next one coming out? And I was like, I don't, like, I, because, like, is Messiah the second book, right?
Messiah's the second book? Yeah, it's that 12 years after Dune.
How long is that book?
It's about a third of Dune.
Oh, right. Okay,
so
sure.
So Dune's 800 pages. Messiah's like 300.
So they could feasibly put all that in one
absolutely.
Movie.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's basically just talking.
Reading the book, did they cut much shit out?
Should we talk about like the film and stuff? Okay.
Just a general.
Well, I'm going to jump to spoilers.
But I mean, like, are there like big sections of the book that they cut out? Like, you know.
To answer this, I'm going to have to like get into some spoilers. So if
just
you're
say
listening.
Yes or no.
No. I want to get into what they do because I want... It's not as simple as that. So the first film is pretty much a faithful one-to-one adaptation of the novel. Okay. Give or take a character here or a set piece there. There's a famous dinner scene which is cut out, which is it hasn't been in any of the versions, I think. Fantastic scene where the Atreides hosts like all of the Iraqi locals and like all the ex-Harkonnen people who still kind of are there and, you know, the... important people. In fact, Lea Seydoux's husband is in that scene.
Oh, okay, right.
So it ties some stuff like that. But other than that, it's very, very similar. It ends... You read it, it's like very faithful. But then the second half of the book, Paul meets the Fremen. Shani doesn't really have a character in it. She's kind of just a device. So her character in the film is so much better. She is like the heart and soul of the film, I would say. Love what they've
done.
For
me, that was the biggest... cliffhanger.
The changes in the book are so...
What they do with those characters at the end of the movie is
But
like,
even so much more. So like, they kind of meet, and this is the kind of, I guess, the writing, especially in the first Dune book, it's not about characters as much as it is about events and things happening, because you'll be reading and then the next chapter is jumped ahead 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Paul's been living with the Fremen for 2 years as opposed to 6 months. He and Shani have a kid you never see. Shani's never in the book. Like barely in it. And the mom. So you know when the mom drinks the water of the life?
Yes.
And goes through like the spice agony stuff. So what happens in the book is she has a child and it's like a walking, talking baby who speaks like an adult and has a lisp and stuff, but will say like really, and she's called like Alia the like people think she's a freak and are scared of her. And I was so worried about how that was gonna be handled.
Handle it, yeah.
And I think the way it's handled in the film is really...
Which is just talking to her unborn daughter.
Yeah, and therefore the time condensation, like, you can't be pregnant for more than 9 months. And so in the book, it skips ahead 2 years and this baby's just there.
Sure.
Everyone's kind of scared of her. She's got bright blue eyes and is kind of this walking, talking prophet. It's really strange. It's in the Lynch version. I was quite worried because I was like, are we going to get like... It just reminded me of like The Little Man or like Baby Geniuses. So that's changed, obviously. It's condensed into like 6 months, but also like... The reason why he wrote Dune Messiah is because a lot of the general public, he said like he wrote because a lot of the general public like, oh, wow, Paul's such a hero. And then he's like, no, he's not. And so he actually leans into the script has been adjusted to suit what Messiah is about like
right.
this guy kind of embracing something that he was kind of like, no, I don't want to be that. And then it's like, wait a minute, if everyone believes it, I'm going to get into it and kind of act like a bit of a tyrant.
Sure.
Yeah. And there's some things that are dropped, like Thufir Hawat, who was the Mentat. Remember the guy from, the guy that like rolled his eyes back. He was like the family computer for the
traders.
So he ends up in the books, like the Harkonnens end up getting control of him. And he's like part of another plot there, but it's like quite busy. And Alia, the daughter, is the one that kills the Baron. So there's all these little changes, but like that you get nuts. So the battle sequence at the end, mm-hmm. it's like one sentence in the book. It's like, and there was a fight. Oh. And then it just.
Because even like, you know, with the expanded battle, it still is quite abrupt.
Yeah. Like it's one sentence.
A lot of characters just go down like pretty quickly.
It's like one line in the book. It's like, as that happened, there was a fight and then Paul ran into this. And so that stuff's really expanded. It's basically structured far more like a traditional film. None of the attacks, those awesome scenes where they're bringing down like sand crawlers.
Yep.
None of that's in the book, but you just hear about them. It's like, we did another attack. So it really shows you Paul becoming Fremen, the film, whereas the book doesn't. It just kind of cheats. And it's 2 years later, he's been living with them. And yeah, so.
Did you enjoy the book?
I really liked the book. Yeah. And it was really fresh in my mind. So I was like, oh, this one's quite different. Like this is very different compared to the first film, which is like faithful, faithful, faithful. But it suits a film narrative much better. Like you can't, the second half, you know, everyone always like Dune's unadaptable, kind of is almost. And the best way I think it's been done is in two books, sorry, as two films.
Yep.
And yeah, it just feels a lot better. And the ending is so much better. And the fight with Fade, and like, he doesn't give Fade Dune in the book, and it makes sense. I like that he does in this. It really hammers home that like he is the antithesis of Atreides, and yeah, really cool stuff.
Yeah. So what do we know is coming next? Nothing at this point, right?
Well, he's written Dune Messiah, but he's waiting for it to be greenlit.
So
they're not doing. He's like, the worst things, he said a quote this week where he's like, the worst thing about films now is like we get a release date, and he's like, art should come first and like a finished product. And he's like, I'm not working to a release date. He's like, all we get now is franchises and release dates. And he's like, I'm not like that. So he said, like, Dune 2 wasn't even greenlit when the first
one came I knew out. That. Yeah. So, I'm almost surprised that he would want to do a third one. Like,
it finishes Paul's story.
Yeah, sure.
It kind of, because I think then, and I, this is, and
I,
spoiler,
I guess
from my,
it seems like he's not creatively stifled by this. And like, you know, the movie before this was Blade Runner. So like, he's still working within someone else's world.
And also, like, you know, I'm not, this isn't a spoiler because I haven't read them, but I think the other ones is, the next one's called Children of Dune. So I imagine that's like kids. And then I think that it jumps like thousands of years through time. So
okay, sure.
I think this trilogy is like the Paul trilogy. And then he's,
aren't
like,
they doing the, like, the Women of Dune TV
There was
TV
a Bene
series?
Gesserit series, but I'm not sure if that's happening anymore. He was attached to it.
Drive Away Dunes.
Drive Away Dolls. Yeah, but,
Drive
very
away
different
worms.
Adaptation than the first film. And I think, it reminds me a lot of The Two Towers, which is like, yeah, that book is structured so differently. Like the Helm's Deep battle is like halfway through the book.
Sure.
And it's just like, in a film, you kind of need that big third.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Totally.
And that the third act in this, and the especially the knife fight between Fade and Paul, is just like one of my favorite final battles I've ever seen in something. Like, it's so visceral. You feel everything. It's so like, it's so stripped back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. And visually, this movie's fucked as well.
Like, and also, like, the holy shit, this guy's in this movie. Like,
when Christopher Walken comes in,
he's like, it's like they didn't cast a single not insanely famous person in this movie. It's crazy. Like, I know a lot was made of like the fact that Anya Taylor-Johnson makes a cameo in this movie.
Yeah,
but like, I didn't know that
she's
fucking
Alia grown up.
Yeah,
the sister. So I imagine in Messiah, they'll probably say she's grown up, and maybe they will do the 12 years, or maybe they'll be like, oh wow, she ages rapidly because of that water.
I didn't know
that you're not supposed to be pregnant while you have it. That's why they freak out, and they're like, what the fuck?
I love that moment. We've made a huge mistake. She's
How
pregnant.
Crazy was it?
That was wonderful.
He mentions Alia's name too in the first film, I believe. When he's in the tent freaking out. He does in the book, but I'm unaware if he does it in the film. I'll check later.
But like, I didn't know that Florence Pugh and Leia Sado. Florence Pugh, like, I'm like, fuck.
She was amazing.
She looked like
this.
Something out of Berserk.
She looked
with
amazing.
That chainmail, like,
her outfits
thing around, like,
were fucking crazy.
Yeah.
It's the best coolest fits she's of ever the looked. Year. Yeah, hands down. Love
she's
that.
Just like, she's always a fave. And like, the like the hardest decision anyone could ever make is Zendaya v. Florence Pugh.
I know.
And Timothy does, he has to deal with the consequences of that decision at the end of the movie, you know?
Because the book kind of ends differently. He's like, I will take her as my wife, but Chani's going to be my concubine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think it narratively makes it way crazier.
Well, you go like, oh man, I was shocked at the ending when she kind of like storms out. And I like that she, not so much in the book, she's kind of nothing in the book. Maybe in the Messiah she's more, but in the first one she's kind of not a lot. And I love that she was the one challenging the Fremen about him.
Yeah. I loved her friend too.
Yeah, so that's a new character. There's no such thing as the Southern fanatics.
Oh, okay, right.
So that's a new thing.
Yeah, well, so they've changed heaps with this. That's great.
They've really structured it. Like, they've really made it into, like, a film, I think. And I think if you just did a one-to-one adaptation, it would be really unsatisfying. Like, the fact they have a kid, we don't even see it in the book. It's literally because it's living at a different siege in the South. And you just don't see it. And then Paul's like, oh, I can feel it's dead. And then you're like, what's the point of the kid? Like, it doesn't add anything. It's really weird. There's just some weird shit in it. And you have to remember that book was not published as a whole book. It was published as chapters in like a sci-fi magazine.
Oh yeah,
put together as a book.
I didn't realize that.
So
that's cool.
This is structured way differently. And Stilgar is far more of a believer in the film.
Javier Bardem was so fucking good in this movie.
How different is he in this to The Little Mermaid?
Like
alive.
Beyond night and day, like, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't think he's actually in The Little Mermaid.
I think Hideo Kojima scanned him for Death Stranding and they somehow got the files. And we're like, let's put him in this. But yeah, he is so good in this. Him and Zendaya are the heart, I think, of the film.
Yeah, but also like...
Jessica is nowhere near as evil in the book. She's like far more controlling and is like... Yes, make them believe. Like, she's cunty in the film. So, it's quite a different film. And I liked that because I was being surprised by it. And I'd literally finished it that afternoon.
It's fucking sick how many amazing performances there are in this movie.
Now, there's one we're not talking about, which I think for me could be the performance of the year. And if I was Tom Hardy, I'd be kind of worried because there's a new cool voice guy. Well,
The two cool voice guys are both about to drive motorbikes into the sunset together.
Why isn't this movie out yet? Drive away, cool voice guys.
Drive away, dudes.
Yeah.
Drive away, look, Dune. Just like Dune 2 ends on a bit of a cliffhanger.
Yeah, we're gonna go deep into
this HeyFam episode is gonna end on a cliffhanger. Who's Angus's favorite performance in Dune 2? You can probably guess. But
let's go through the film. We'll talk about our favorite scenes. We'll talk about the fucking Hans Zimmer soundtrack blaring.
We'll make predictions of what Kojima's gonna think of this movie. What tweets he's gonna do? Oh, dude, he's gonna say it 400 times. That's gonna be the Brie Larson. This guy saw Captain Marvel 200 times. Maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's Kojima.
How good was the Geaty Prime scene? That's the
Kojima and Timothy Chalamet. This guy saw Dune 2 400 times.
He's hanging out with Timmy all the time. The gladiator battle on Geaty Prime.
Oh, bro, we're gonna talk about
that. Just the fucking color palette.
Some of the best scenes in a big movie.
How cool are those weird fucking Silent Hill looking dudes just standing in the arena with the triangle heads?
Not explaining anything about him.
Just stabbing the guy in the back. First Dune I saw, it felt very alien. And it's what I was like, the whole movie reminds me of what it must have been like to have seen the cantina scene for the first time on a screen without seeing anything like that before. And this film does that as well to me. Fucking how good is Stellan Skarsgård just floating around being a fat cunt?
Save it.
Brother, Dune 2, big so chat.
Just like Dune Part 2, if you want HeyFam Part 2, you got to go to patreon.com/HeyFam because every week when we stop doing HeyFam, we start doing PayFam. So you get a bonus full episode of HeyFam immediately by going to patreon.com/HeyFam. $5 a month is all it costs to get access to the PayFam archives. And there are hundreds of hours of content for you to listen to.
There's so much that maybe even if a French-Canadian filmmaker goes to adapt it, they might even change some parts.
That's true. But you also
it
get
might
access...
make women better characters in the film.
you get the access to our Discord. There's a Dune 2 spoiler channel where thousands of replies.
But no one's seen it yet. Only
it's going off.
It's about it's
off
to the Richter. It's about to be big.
Yeah,
we're on the cusp of greatness.
Come join us over at Patreon.
I posted a good meme in there saying Bene Gesserit turbo pussy got me acting unwise.
That's incredible.
How good is that?
Did you make that?
No, I just saw it on Twitter. That's great. Oscar Isaac and saying Bene Gesserit turbo pussy got me acting unwise.
Okay, maybe we'll put that on our Instagram this week.
How good is that shit?
Yeah, please come join us for the second part of our discussion.
Bro, he really hit
of
that
the second
and
didn't
put
of
a
you.
Ring on it. That's crazy.
That's true.
Right? That's fucking crazy.
We'd love to see you there. And just letting you know that HeyFam might take a little bit of a break because I'm going on tour with Five for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I think there's opportunity for me to record
a bean pod
next weekend with Angus. But it,
yeah,
I think,
I'm not doing anything.
I think it'll just be like a HeyFam episode or something like that. So
sure.
If you're wondering where we are,
also,
that's where we are.
Don't listen to the podcast next week. Go see Dune 2.
And then listen to
our
discussion of it at patreon.com/HeyFam.
And then listen to it again after you've watched it a second time. I'm so excited this week, dude. I got to say, just because all the film podcasts I listen to, a lot of them are going to be talking about Dune.
Oh, man, it's going to be so sick.
I fucking kind of hate seeing things really early, I've noticed. Like, TV
well, you keep doing it.
I know, but I kind of hate it because I'm like, oh, I can't wait to talk. And then when it comes out, I'm like, hey, what happened again? Like, it's so... No, not with Dune 2, but like...
You must have been confused seeing this early without your fucking email across the screen.
It was so weird. I was like, how do I know this is me? No, yeah.
Anyway, come join us over at Patreon.com. HeyFam. We love you. See you soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.